just as we're thinking today about the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church, we were a number of us at a conference recently, and it was very interesting, this conference on kind of missional discipleship. There was quite a strong prophetic edge that probably as churches in the West, we do need to think about this stuff. In terms of the persecuted church, absolutely, we need to pray for the persecuted church throughout the world. And Mark, one of our elders, is kind of onto this on our behalf. And I think it's going to be fruitful. We have connection with a number of folks. Some of our missionaries literally have been Mark Gibson. I don't know whether Mark's here this morning. I don't think he is. But, literally goes and ministers in Burkina Faso into a country where believers are facing persecution. Ray and Bridget send students throughout the world. One of them came to us not so long back and, ministers in a country where Christians face persecution. So absolutely, we need to support these brothers and sisters. But I think, I'll be honest with you, I'm a bit reluctant to do that. Because I don't like reading this stuff. And here's the thing, when persecution comes, they go for the church leaders. It's like, oh my life. But I think it will grow us. I think it will mature us. I think it will sober us to engage and pray for our brothers and sisters throughout the world. We're looking at the moment at 1 Peter, and as part of my prep this week, reading one of the commentators said that, the students in their college, 1 Peter is the favourite book amongst the Christians from persecuted countries. And they said, not many of us in the West, again, necessarily 1 Peter is our favourite book. We love the Psalms, Genesis, whatever. Actually, it's 1 Peter. Because it speaks into, as we're going to see, these situations. So I don't say that to intimidate us. Jesus is still on the throne. He's still on the throne in the West. He's still on the throne in persecuted countries. So we've got nothing to fear. So Lord, bless your word to us this morning, we pray. But I'm going to speak this morning about misfits. I wonder if you have ever or do feel like a misfit. Something about an outsider. I wonder if you've been in a situation where you feel like an outsider for whatever reason. If I ask you to show your hands, I dare say a good number of us have felt that. And it happens at different levels, doesn't it? I do remember, as many of you know, my wife is very posh. What are you laughing at? And we went once when we were in London to a meal with some Sloan Ranger friends that Ali knew from somewhere. And I felt out of place. Okay, dad's a builder, mum's a hairdresser. I like to think of myself as working class. Okay, and I've improved myself, redemptive lift they call it. Anyway, we're at this Sloan Ranger's and these people were posh. They were talking about what they were getting for Christmas, like yachts. And things, what are you receiving? And I just remember, for some reason, I remember they were all dressed up. They'd come from the city and banking and all the rest of it, ties, collar. For some reason, I wore this fisherman's jumper. And I just felt really out of place. Now, that is not an issue, is it? That's feeling a bit out of place on a ridiculously superficial level. But some of you have felt out of place. Some of you are, can I put it like this, foreigners? I want to say, Lord, help us to be a place that welcomes folks who are not from this nation, that you do not feel like outsiders. Isn't it great? I loved Anya and Alina on vocals this morning, both Polish. Awesome. Where did that come from? How did that happen in little old Bilton? Isn't that good? What about accent? Saw something the other day in the paper that, certain accents are more likely to get us jobs. It's northern industrial towns that don't. Chris. Where's Chris gone? Ray. Just saying.
And West Bromwich.
West Bromwich as well. Midlands as well. Okay. And then, of course, the colour of our skin can make us feel like an outsider. The Christian community is to be the truly most inclusive community on the earth by the Spirit of God. So I wonder if this resonates. Well, I think there's encouragement for us this morning. for that reason, but also for this situation of kind of what's out there in terms of antagonism in society. 1 Peter then is so apt. I'm so pleased we've chosen it as a book to look at this time. And we're going to look at 1 Peter 2 this morning. So if you have a Bible, we're in 1 Peter 2. I'm just going to start reading it. Peter's been talking about salvation, coming to Christ, being holy as he is holy. And then he says this, as you come to him, the living stone, rejected by humans, but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For in Scripture it says, see, I lay a stone in Zion. This is from the Old Testament. A chosen and precious cornerstone, and the one who trusts in him will never be put to shame. Now to you who believe, this stone is precious. But to those who do not believe, the stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. It's talking there about Christ's rejection and how God nonetheless made Christ the cornerstone of our faith. And a stone that causes people to stumble and a rock that makes them fall. They stumble because they disobey the message, which is also what they were destined for. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. That's what we're called to as a Christian community. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Dear friends, I urge you, as foreigners and exiles, to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. I really do think there's a lot in that passage for us as a Christian community today. So I think perhaps there's some similarities here as to where we are beginning to find ourselves as Christians in society. I wonder if this resonates. What we see here in the book of Peter is this. There's an antithesis, a division, a difference, a fundamental difference in the air between the Christian faith and prevailing worldviews. Let me say that again. There is a fundamental difference in the air between the Christian faith and the prevailing worldviews. These are becoming more and more incompatible. They just can't be resolved. Talking about lifestyle and morality. And Christians, one commentator says, we're kind of moving from being unsocial to antisocial. Unsocial to antisocial. What does that mean? Elsewhere, I think in 1 Peter, but certainly other books, it talks about Christians, you know, we're not to join in the kind of lifestyle of that's out there in the world. In the book of Corinth, Corinth is was a place where just kind of immorality and, you know, hedonistic lifestyle without any moral boundaries was the thing. And the writers of the New Testament say we're not to join into that. In that sense, we're to be unsocial. It may appear that we'll be unsocial. Not long after I became a Christian, I had a bunch of mates, non-Christian lads, that knew me before I was a Christian, and we used to get together. And there was some, I can't remember what the program was, but it was some kind of spoof. I think Mel Smith, who did, Not the 9 O'Clock News. Anyone remember that? Those of you 50 and over, probably. This is an older generation here. Not the 9 O'Clock News. They did this kind of spoof on history. And it did a thing one time on Christians in the Roman Empire. And it said, the reason Christians in the Roman Empire, I was sat with these mates watching this program, the reasons Christians in the Roman Empire were persecuted was this. They were so boring. They were just so boring. You know, these hedonistic lifestyles. And all these Christian mates of mine looked at me and went, oh, bless you, Paul. You know, bless you, boring little person, you kind of thing, not going out, living it up. But Christians then went from being unsocial to something far more significant, antisocial. They were seen as harmful to society. I think we've made that transition in many areas. I think many people no longer see us just as unsocial, but actually as harmful to society, that our morality, our take on some of the big moral issues out there in society are harmful. Someone has said, I found it a really helpful phrase, we are now, unlike previously, on the wrong side of moral orthodoxy. So firstly, there's this antithesis in the air. Secondly, then, Christians are increasingly becoming misfits. In this day and age, in amongst your work colleagues, maybe amongst your friends, as you're in conversations, do you just feel, I feel a bit out of place here. I feel a bit of an outsider. I do think, and it's one of the reasons we need to pray for them, I think the younger generations feel this. Because, you know, some of us still exist in a world where perhaps our peers have a vestige of Christianity. They were brought up in schools that used to sing hymns, or maybe they went to Sunday school. Okay, even my generation. But our younger generations, that's no longer the case. And so we increasingly perhaps feel misfits. And Peter picks up on this in verse 12 here. He talks about them feeling like, and the words are variously translated, but the words all have a similar connotation, that you are aliens, he says. You're foreigners. You're strangers, you're exiles, you're pilgrims. What he's saying is this, you don't really belong here. This isn't your home. You will feel out of place, but that's okay. In fact, I think there's something to be said that if we don't feel out of place, we probably need to question how we see the world, actually. It's not, now listen, don't go making yourself awkward, okay? Don't be one of those Christians that kind of, you know, just, like some Christians are just weird, okay? And that's our fault. But there should be something about, if we live the Christian life full on as we are to, it will be a bit incompatible. And guys, we've got to get used to that. I think it's out there now. I don't think we're facing persecution. Let's not kid ourselves, for goodness sake. Have you read about North Korea? But I think the world is antagonistic. And that will jar. That won't sit comfortably. And we've just got to get used to it. But there's hope in the midst of this. There's a way of living in the midst of this. And what we do see, though, in the New Testament world was this. Persecution was then taking root. Persecution was taking root. And the one Peter has written, in fact, a lot of the New Testament letters are written in this context. It may not be yet, here in 1 Peter, state endorsed. It was in AD 64 that Nero blamed the Christians for the fire of London, and there was state endorsed persecution. So this letter may have been written before that, but there was still persecution in the provinces. As a governor would decide to interpret laws a certain way or just take a dislike to Christians. And we see that, don't we? We see different town councils, different police forces, you know, kind of objecting, being more antagonistic than elsewhere. It's one of the reasons why we need to build bridges with state authorities. And we need to pray that the Lord will open those doors for us here in Rugby. I believe this firmly. I think this, can I just say, as I'm sharing this, I think this is an important message to us. Actually, I think this is the world we live in, and we've got to stop kidding ourselves that we can keep our heads down, keep plowing on, and we'll kind of get by. Things will come our way, guys, if we're seeking to live for him. So what hope is there then for these Christians? Where can these misfits find a home? Well, in 1 Peter, what we see is this. God is at work, forging a church through refining, that would be able to stand together in the face of opposition and trial. A church that would be forged together by the Spirit so that we can stand